Okay, so we are ready to start now on part two of this podcast and marketing recording on what to do and not to do at art shows. And here we are going to talk about the things that you shouldn't do as an artist when you sell your work at an art show.
So we've already talked about Amado Pena and how well that went. So I think the next thing we should talk about is the very next booth that we entered and what our experience was there. And I think we should start off by saying that we had seen this artist who is also a painter. I'm not going to say any names. She paints wildlife scenes in Arizona, I would say, because it's, you know, the gamble quail of Arizona with the cactus. You know,
very so detailed, very realistic.
It's the Sonoran Desert, and it's very beautiful. It's more of illustration, I would say, painting. It's very nice. But I think it's important for you to know, as the audience listening to the podcast, that we had met this artist 2 weeks before, and we really liked her work, and we were looking at a couple of pieces, because we were looking for a fairly large piece, and I think they were around $2,000 or more for those paintings.
Around $2,000 to $3,000, yeah. We were looking for something that was 10 feet long.
Right.
Because we have a very large space in our kitchen, actually, that's 10 feet long. It's a recess, and we wanted to, you know, place some of her artwork there. And actually, I joked with her that I could make a print of my own photographs, but that it was simpler to just buy one of her paintings. And, you know, when an artist tells you that, you know, you need to listen carefully, because they are cracking a joke. And obviously, they are not cracking it because they can't make a print of their work 10 feet long. They are cracking it because it's a way to say, you know, I really like your work, and I think I'm putting it at the same level as my work.
Well, and also, we went to this show because we knew she was going to be there, because she had given us her show dates for all the shows, you know, in the local area 2 weeks before. Right. So we were actually kind of looking for her at this show. So
we were definitely interested.
Definitely. We were in the buying frame of mind, because we had her in mind when we went to that show.
Right. We were qualified. And I don't know if she knew that, but we know that as a seller, as a salesperson, you have to qualify the people that work in your booth. And you qualify them by asking questions. Are you, for example, you ask, are you investing in art? Do you collect art? Do you have some of my work? Sometimes you can't remember if people have bought your work. You know, they might have bought it somewhere else. Are you familiar with my work? How much do you know about this? Do you like this realistic style of painting? If you know, because our standard painting is very realistic, and if you answer, you know, I only collect abstract art, well, you're not qualified.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know.
Right. But she did recognize us when we walked into the booth, but and we are carrying packages.
But she recognized us, but, you know, I can recognize a lot of things. That doesn't mean we are qualified, you know.
Right. But I remember she didn't greet us like she did the first time a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
I know that when I do a show and I'm selling your work, and I see somebody that I recognize that has been in the booth before, I make sure that I greet that customer and tell them how good it is to see them again, and, you know, how can I help them? Because they're here for a second time, so they're obviously pretty, there's a piece that they're interested in.
Well, I think, you know, you've pointed to a very important fact, which is she made one mistake immediately by not greeting us. But I think that mistake may have come from her being angry at the fact that we did not buy the first time. And that, if that's true, and I would think that it is true, I hadn't thought of that, she made a second mistake, which is way worse. And that is to assume that people that buy $2,000 to $3,000 pieces of artwork are going to make their mind up on the first visit.
I don't.
And we know that that's not the case.
Right.
And we know that's not the case, not because it's art, but because it's a luxury product. When we switch from buying cars at the Nissan dealership to buying cars at the Porsche dealership, something very, very important happened. I went to the salesperson and I said, okay, the last time I bought a car, they wanted to see my title, my driver's license, and my credit card before they even talked to me. And I looked at the person and I said, are you going to do that here? And he said, no. He was laughing his head off. He says, no, we don't do this here. We expect you to come back several times before you make a purchase. And I thought, wow. What a breakthrough. This is another world.
Right.
And I looked at him and I said, well, good, because I'm not going to make up my mind today. And he looked at me and says, we don't even expect you to make up your mind today. It's perfectly fine.
He said the only people that will make up their mind today are previous Porsche owners
right.
who know exactly what they want the second time.
And they've gone through the whole process of trusting the company, which
exactly.
is very important. So, you know, when you buy a luxury product, you are expected to spend quite a bit of time trying to decide what you want, you know, as opposed to buying something on the basis of price. If you go to a store that has a sale, and that store is the lowest priced in the city, and they have a product that you like, you better buy it right here, right now, because the next time you come back, it probably won't be gone.
Right.
But when you buy a luxury product, the understanding is that you're buying something not because of the price, not because of the availability, but because that's what you really want. You know, and you're not going to buy a whole lot of them, you know. So with her, I think that one of the problems that she has, or one of the mistakes that she made, is not understanding what she's selling. She's selling a luxury product. Art is a luxury.
Right.
We can debate whether luxuries are necessary or unnecessary. You know, that's another thing. But it's definitely a luxury. It's something that I buy because I have the means and I have, you know, the lifestyle to need that.
Right. Well, we also brought Venus to that show with us because Venus had never been to a show and she wanted to go. So we're also bringing a guest with us. Mm-hmm. And I was a little surprised that she didn't greet us, even just by saying, "Hi, guys, it's nice to see you again." What really disturbed me was her talking to the other artist or a different artist.
Well, that was the third mistake that she made.
And, you know, we're walking around the booth. We're looking for a particular painting, obviously.
Right.
And so nobody is, she's not talking to us, her husband's not talking to us.
Well, not only she's not talking to us, but she's talking to the other artists and they are making jokes about the guy across the street, right?
Right, or they're talking about how bad the show is or, you know, I didn't follow the whole conversation.
It was pretty negative. And
it was.
And it was, I perceived it as adverse to the customer. That is, they are talking badly about the customer. It might not be me, but it may be some people before me, right?
Or somebody across the way.
Yeah.
Or
they are taking negative. That's very bad, you know.
Right.
And if you say you have a bad show, guess what? Soon enough, you have a bad show, you know.
Well,
I mean, you know, I like that saying. Whether you think you can or whether you think you cannot, you are right.
Right.
That is, if you say, you know, I can't sell that, well, guess so. Soon enough, you can't sell it, you know. But if you say, I can sell that, well, guess what? Soon enough, you can sell that.
Right. Well, she was animated, and I'm not sure why she was the way she was, but I remember she looked at us both after she broke away from that artist, and she said, "Well, have you made up your mind yet?"
Right.
And when she said that, I looked right at you, and I thought to myself, yeah, I have made up my mind. I'm not giving you $2,000.
All free, yeah.
That's what I thought. And you said, well, what did you say? You said we're in the process or we're going through the process?
Well, I'm not as direct as you when it comes to that.
I didn't say anything.
No, but I mean, I don't, you know, I looked at her and I said, well, we are going through the process.
But which was the honest truth.
Yeah, it's a process.
Right.
You know, it's a process. Once I buy this artwork, you know, and I'm not saying that it's expensive or not. It's actually not that expensive for the size of it. But once I buy this artwork, you know, I'm going to have to enjoy it in my kitchen. It's a main viewing area. It's 10 feet long. You know, I better like it.
Right.
Enough that I can live with it for the next 5 or 10 years. That, you know, that needs some time. It's a process. I have to, you know, make decisions here. And she doesn't understand that process, you know. That's because she's making all these mistakes, you know. And so let's just recap the kind of mistakes that she made. The first one is that she doesn't greet us, right? That's the first mistake.
After, you know, seeing us again,
right.
I mean,
right.
we just
saw
her 2 weeks ago.
The second mistake is that she doesn't realize that we are qualified, that we actually came back to buy.
Right.
The third mistake is that instead of talking to us and helping us, she's now discussing, you know, her life with another artist.
And we brought a friend. We brought a potential
customer. And
she's not
greeting that friend either. Right.
A potential customer, because we're bringing somebody with us.
Right. And then the fourth thing is that she's trying to rush the decision in a situation that it can't be rushed. You cannot rush a luxury product purchase. You know, if somebody wants a luxury car and you look at them and you say, well, have you made up your mind yet? They'll go to the next luxury dealer. They'll say, yes, I have made my mind. This is not for me. You know. And then the fourth mistake that she makes is to basically, I think that she was upset at us. And the only reason that I could think of, you know, that I would have had a responsibility in that is that I was carrying the G9, you know, which is a small Canon camera, and I was taking photographs of the artwork. because I thought I would use that to look at later on and see if I really like it. And, you know, some artists don't like that you take photographs of their work, although most don't care. And obviously, I'm not creating high-quality photographs for reproduction. If that happens, and you don't like somebody taking photographs of your booth, you just go to them and you say, excuse me, sir, but we don't allow photography in the booth. And that's all. And we stop. She never said that. So, you know, you can't be angry at somebody without giving them the rules, right? That's the law, you know. If you don't have any sign that says don't photograph, then really you can't really expect people to just guess, you know.
And I think we were having such a difficult time in the buying process, and she wasn't helping. And right. I think...
I think we were working our way towards asking her to make a custom piece because we like certain aspects of different paintings, but they were not in any one painting. So I wanted a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Exactly.
You know, so that I had a painting that had all the elements that I liked. And she was doing that, you know. That was she offered to do that.
Yeah. Because there were certain aspects that we thought were a little gimmicky or a little...
Well, we like certain things and not others,
right.
You know.
And she does custom pieces regularly for customers.
Right. And she doesn't charge more.
No.
So that was an asset. She had many things going for her. We liked the work. She was doing custom work so she could put together elements from different painting into one.
And she wasn't charging
more. She wasn't charging more. She wouldn't delay that much. It probably wouldn't take more than a week or two. I mean, there was a lot of assets.
We could have picked it up in a couple of weeks at another show.
A lot of things were going on. She wasn't framing your work, which was nice because you didn't have to pay for an expensive frame that you might not want, you know.
Exactly.
The work looked nice on frame.
It
was the right size. It was panoramic, which, you know, this space that we have is 4 feet high by 10 feet long, so it had to be panoramic. But the salesmanship, you know, just was horrendous, you know. So that's the bad, right?
It was. I remember we left I think that was pretty much the tail end of all the booths that we saw, and we pretty much left after that. But I remember how Venus was upset, and she said
that she didn't. She said, "You know, you need to keep looking."
Yeah,
that's what she said.
She was also upset at her tone of voice.
Yeah,
when
how we were treated.
And I remember Venus saying that she would never buy a piece from her. And then when we got to our house again, Venus said, "You know,
Just keep looking.
You can find something that's much nicer."
And in a sense, that was nice to have Venus with us because we could be sure that it wasn't us.
That we hadn't made a mistake either.
It wasn't us just imagining things. It was really happening.
Right.
Because sometimes, you know, you don't know for sure. And also, it was the end of the show. We were tired. And probably that artist was tired also. But the problem is that, you know, as an artist, when you sell, you must be on your best behavior from the minute you walk into your booth to the minute you shut down. I've had some of my biggest sales
at the very end of the day.
I had one sale one day. I was packing up. And it was at the Altavar, and these two people walked down the path, came onto the grass, and talked to me over there was a sort of a railing. And so they were below me, behind the railing, talking to me, and they said, "When did you take that photograph?" And I thought, you know, it's been a long day, and I don't feel like answering another stupid question. And I looked at them, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to tell them the facts. And I said, you know, I took it in November, and I think it was that day, I can't remember, November 10th, a year ago. And they looked at each other and they say, "That's incredible."
And they're smiling at each other.
Yeah, like, really? I was like, "This is rewarding." I tell them a date, and these people can't. You know,
and before
they can't get over it, you know.
Yeah, but before I think you were like, "Well, should I tell them the truth about the month?"
And I was so tired. I didn't want to answer, but I thought I'm just going to answer. And they came around and they said, "You know, we are very interested in that piece." And I said, "If you don't mind me asking, why is that piece so meaningful to you?" And they said, "You know, it was taken the day we were married."
It was.
And we were married at that viewpoint. You know, they asked me what viewpoint was, Hopi point. And I looked at them and I thought, oh my God, this is so incredible. And they said, you know, how big is it?
Right.
And I thought, you know, here are people that want this piece. And now we're looking at the size and it's not going to happen because it's not emotional. And I said, you know, it's that wide. And I knew exactly the size because I had framed it. I don't remember what it was, but I told them the size. They went to their truck and they measured behind the back seat and they came back and they said, you know, it's going to fit.
It'll slide right
in.
And
I said, so what does it mean? I said, well, we want it. And they did not even negotiate. They bought it, put it behind the seat. And it was an expensive piece.
Right.
It was a very expensive piece. It was my biggest sale of the day, or maybe the show, because that was my biggest piece. And, you know, all of that happened because even though I was tired and I was probably a little cranky, I was putting all of that aside and saying, listen, you know, you must be on your best behavior.
You have to. I've had sales the last 5 minutes of a show, big sales. Yeah. And, you know, I was probably starting to pack things. And the minute that person, I just dropped everything and gave them my full attention. And like you said, you go through your salesmanship, you know, just like you do if it's the beginning of the show. Right. It doesn't change because it's the end.
And that's why it's so important to learn salesmanship, so that you have a routine. And you can put it on autopilot and you don't even have to think.
Right.
You know, I know exactly how to do it, even though I might not be fully there, I'm exhausted. I'm going to say, hi, how are you doing today? You know,
let me tell you about
my work. Here's my artist statement. Which one is your favorite? Where do you want to hang it? Do you collect art? Do you collect photographs? Do you like my work? You know, all of that. And they just go through the routine. And then I start to qualify them. I say, well, if you were to purchase this artwork, do you have an idea where you would display it in your home? And they're going to answer. And from then, I'm just going to proceed. And then I say, well, have you made up your mind as to which one you like the most? And they'll say, yes, we really like that one. Then I'll say, is that the right size, or would you like one of a different size? And then, you know, we basically work our way towards whether we want to take it with them or have it shipped. And then it's done.
Right.
And I really don't have to think.
No.
Because none of that is anything that requires any thinking. It's what I do all the time.
Well, it's no different than you learning all the technical about using the camera.
Right. Right.
And, you know, that's like second nature when you photograph, and that you're just working on the artistic. It should come as second nature.
The only difference is, and you're right, there is an artistic and a technical aspect to salesmanship, but the only difference is that salesmanship really does not require you to be very inspired. You can just be yourself. You know, inspiration is only needed when you have an extraordinarily uncommon.
But enthusiasm is important.
Enthusiasm is very important.
Yes.
If you're not enthusiastic, they won't be enthusiastic. You know, and you know, the person that I studied marketing with always said enthusiasm ends with IASM, and it stands for I am sold myself.
Yes.
You have to be sold out on your product. One thing that totally shocks me are artists that don't decorate their home with their own work.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
I'm not saying that we have only my work in the house. We don't. We have a very large collection of work by other artists. But we also have my work.
Yes.
You know, it's important to like your own work. You know, I went to a friend's house one day, and I told him that I was surprised that none of his work was in the house. And he told me that if he did, then he would never get away from his job. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's true on the one hand, but on the other hand, I mean, you know, your job is not to fabricate seat covers, right? You know, which I would understand you don't want to see all day long, you know, but your job is to fabricate artwork, which is supposed to be an expression of yourself.
Right.
You know, I mean, it'd be like somebody that does custom cars and doesn't drive one of their own cars, you know. I mean, you know, it's, you know, there is an emotional aspect to that. And if you're not enthusiastic with your own work, you can't expect anybody to be.
Right.
You know, it's delusional.
I think the other things we can discuss, what works and what does not work at art shows, is some of the customer turnoffs, I think. You know, the artist is sitting down in their booth, or even way, way in the back where you don't see the artist at all.
Right. And a lot of artists do that because they're shy.
Yes.
They don't understand that shyness in sales means no sales.
Exactly.
That you're going to have to get over your shyness. You know, how? Well, we can help you with that. But definitely it's something to work about, you know, to get rid of, you know. Being shy doesn't help being successful.
Right.
We know for a fact that if you cannot say what you want and you cannot go get what you want, nobody's going to give it to you.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, people believe, you know, in what we call magical thinking, but somehow, someday they're going to wake up and the world will be all realigned so that the path to success is wide open in front of them. That's magical thinking. You know, the thinking that somehow they're going to find a show where they're going to sell all of their photographs at once and make a fortune and never have to work.
Or the paintings will sell themselves.
Or the paintings
or the artwork will sell themselves.
All of that is magical thinking. We know that, you know, in order to be successful, you have to take total control over your destiny. And being shy, unfortunately, doesn't work.
No.
And I know what I'm talking about because I used to be extremely shy until I realized that shyness is what separates you from your goals.
Right.
You know, that in order to achieve your goal, you have to work over your shyness and be able to tell people, listen, this is what I want. And that's not what I want. I mean, that's not what I do. I go to people whenever I want something and I say, okay, this is what I want. And then I see if it can help me get what I want or not.
Right. You know? I know when I do the art shows and I'm selling your work, I sit right in the front just like Amado Pina does.
Right.
And I'll greet everybody that's walking by. Right. I'll smile and I'll say hi. Whether they walk into my booth or not doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that I'm pleasant to every single person that walks by.
You can't greet somebody expecting them to buy as a reward. That's not the idea. We know for a fact that out of 100 persons that walk in your booth, maybe 5 will buy. You know, at the Grand Canyon, I calculated that over the time we were there, and this is a rough estimate, but it's based on the Grand Canyon having 5 million people a year, that if we got, at the very least, you know, a couple hundred thousand a year walking in front of our booth, that would make at least 1 million people seeing my work, walking right in front of the work, having contact with the work over a 5-year period. So that's a lot of people. And out of this 1 million, we made a few thousand sales. Right?
Yes.
So the percentage is extremely low. So if you think, I'm going to say hi, and if they don't buy anything, I'm going to treat them like I don't know them, you're wrong. Because you're going to have to say hi to millions of people that will never buy. But the problem is you don't know who's going to buy. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And you cannot qualify people on their look. Okay, that's another mistake that many artists make. They look at people and they're like, well, he's not dressed very well. Well, you know, I mean, I drive a very expensive car, but I don't dress very expensively because that's my style. If you look at people's clock, you know, a watch, it used to be a way to tell if somebody had means or not. It doesn't anymore because anybody can buy a knockoff watch on the internet and have a $5,000 watch that actually they paid $20 for. So you can't do that. You know, most people now don't even wear watches anymore. They have the clock, the time on their phone, right? So you can't go with any of that. You have to go by asking questions. That's the only way you can really qualify somebody. Asking questions, the crucial questions are, do you collect art? That's very important. If I walk into a pet store, for example, and we went to PetSmart, right? And we went there to buy seeds for birds, right? But we go in there and the person starts to sell me a pet. I'm not a customer because I don't want pets. So the first question that she should ask is, do you have pets or do you want to have pets? And my answer would be no, I just buy seeds for birds, you know, and we're done.
Right.
You have to qualify people. If you ask them, do you collect art? And they say no, your immediate question should be, are you interested in starting a collection of art? Mm-hmm. If they say no, we're done.
Right.
How can they buy art if they don't want to collect? You know, so, you know, you have to start somewhere.
I have another one. Talking on the cell phone or texting, that's a big thing right now.
Right. I mean, we have many students that keep their Twitter account up to date to the minute.
Facebook.
And it's great. We love learning.
I'm at the Fountain Hill show, you know.
And we love learning what they're up to. But the problem is, you know, the customers don't appreciate it. Because as they're texting how the show is going and what they're doing, people are walking in front of their booth that they cannot greet. And these people are lost opportunities.
Right. I agree. I have seen this, and I don't know if you have, but also people, or artists mainly, watching movies or playing games. They have a little portable DVD player, so they're watching a 3-hour movie or they're playing games, and that's another one. And then what I've noticed is, you know, customers that are walking by, all of a sudden, they become more interested in what movie are you watching or what game are you playing than they are in the artwork.
Right. And the reason is exactly the same that I mentioned before. You have the authority because it's your booth, it's your artwork, it's your business. And if you, as the authority, say, listen, we're going to watch a movie today, then the customers are going to take you on that word.
Yes.
It's more important to watch this movie than it is to buy this artwork.
Right.
You know, the bottom line is that you cannot do any of that in your booth. The only thing you can do in your booth is be there for the customer, greet them, talk to them, qualify them, ask questions, make sales, help them. You know, you cannot eat and drink in your booth. You cannot answer the phone in your booth. You cannot text in your booth. You cannot, you know, keep up with your Twitter or Facebook account in your booth. You cannot watch movies in your booth. You cannot play games in your booth. You cannot sleep in your booth. We've seen that too. You know, it's like, it's a nice sunny day and I'm going to take a nap. Well, yeah.
But reading a book.
You cannot read a book. You know, And you cannot sit down also. You have to be standing. Or if you really have, it gets tiring on your legs, then buy a director chair and sit at the height of the castle.
Eye level.
Right?
So you're at their eye level. Right. That's very important because you don't want them looking down at you.
The only thing that you can do in your booth is man the booth, operate the booth. That's it. That's why you're here. If you do anything else, people are going to think, well, that artist obviously doesn't need to sell their work. Otherwise, they'd be here helping me.
Well, I did write down some appropriate behavior that I think...
So we are not totally negative. We have to point out to the good things.
No, because I want to talk about some behavior that is appropriate in your booth and what I do in my booth. Dusting, taking a little feather duster.
Right. Cleaning the artwork.
The artwork. Yeah. So whether it's dusting, making fresh price tags, changing the bags of your prints.
Because you always want to sell a product that's brand new.
So it looks fresh.
Yeah.
So it looks clean.
Nobody wants to buy artwork that's beat up and dirty.
Cleaning the glass. Now, creating artwork, this works for some artists. For you and I, it doesn't. But for Amado painting in his booth, this is very good. For some of my girlfriends who do the shows, if they do a lot of knitting, baby blankets, baby clothes, booties, baby hats, that works very well for them. People really enjoy seeing them knit and making, the hats and the baby blankets and the baby sweaters and all of that. And I think that's appropriate.
Right. But one of the reasons why it works for Pina is because he's got Mike selling.
That's true.
And so he is not doing everything at the same time. He's not painting with one hand and selling with the other. If you're alone in your booth, you cannot paint. And you cannot create artwork because then you become unable to sell. You have to have somebody else with you to help you. Now, some people are going to challenge me on that and say, I do both. Think about it. At one point, something is going to suffer. It's going to be either the sales or the artwork. Because you cannot divide your mind towards creative and business. You see what I'm saying? Either the artwork is not going to be good or the sales are not going to be good.
No, I understand that. But I would watch her with the knitting. And knitting, I think, is very different than creating a painting.
Right.
Because she was really on top of people walking by her booth. She always smiled and said hi, even though she was knitting. She could almost do that unconsciously.
It's going to work better for some crafts than for others.
Yes.
And definitely it's going to work better for crafts if you're alone.
And not fine art.
Absolutely.
No, I agree.
But talking in terms of fine art, which is what we teach. My advice is if you're going to create artwork in your booth, have somebody else there manning the sales.
Exactly. I do agree with that.
So that you can use Pina's approach, which is I paint and he sells.
If you sell jewelry, the simple thing of just cleaning your jewelry,
that's
having
different.
One of those cleaning cloths, you're polishing the silver, you're making the jewelry look great. I mean, these are little things that can potentially help your sales and boost your sales because you're making the merchandise look better.
Well, and also, always the same. Whatever attitude you have is going to be taken seriously by your customers. So if you care about the artwork by cleaning it, polishing it, all of that, they're going to care about the artwork. It's a symbiosis. You're basically looking at customers that model the attitude after your attitude. That's why we are very respectful of the artwork. If you're not respectful of the artwork, they won't be respectful of the artwork.
Right.
I mean, we have a rule, which is we never place any artwork on the ground.
Yes.
Artwork is always displayed on the walls or in a print bin if it's a print or on a table. It never is on the ground. And the reason why we do that is because the minute you put artwork on the ground, you devalue it.
Exactly.
And if you devalue it, then your customers are going to devalue it. And one of the things that we've seen at that same show, which was really not just bad, but I think literally the ugly at that point, was one artist that had only artwork on the ground.
Exactly.
I mean, and rows and rows and rows. I mean, this was definitely, wholesale in a retail show.
What was what did Venus say when she saw
that? She would not even walk in the booth. She said, oh my God, this is too much for me.
I think she was
shocked. I mean, this artist had, first of all, sold only large pieces, like 20 by 30.
Canvases,
framed. He had maybe one of each hanging on the wall of his booth. And then he had like 20 lined up under each of them, framed on the ground. And the prices were dismal. I mean, a 20 by 30 was $95.
I think so.
It was
very inexpensive.
And he looked at me and he says, we can work on the price. On what? I mean, I'm going to walk out with $50 for a 20 by 30? I mean, that's not even 10% of what I sell mine. That's maybe 5% or 2%.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you look at him and you're like, first, you know, who in the world would devalue his works that low? And second, why should I buy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're comparing to Pena, which is charging probably $1,000 for the same thing, and this guy is charging $95, and you're like, you know, one thing that a lot of artists don't understand when it comes to pricing, and I think it's because, you know, they are where we were, and that is, you don't have to afford your own work. You know, I mean, when we started selling my work, I could not have bought my own work. I did not have enough money to buy my work. You know, if I sold a piece at $2,000, I did not have $2,000 to buy my piece. You know, but I knew that I did not have to afford it because I already own it. You know, and a lot of artists have that problem. They're like, well, if I price it that low, then I can no longer afford it. Well, you're not the one that can afford it. That's not the point. You're not the one buying it. You're addressing an audience, and the problem is you don't know who that audience is. And a very important aspect of buying art, you know, especially photographs and painting, but also sculptures, is that this art is going to go into a home. And if that home is worth, say, $1 million, you're not going to put a $95 photograph in that home,
right?
Because you're going to devalue the home.
Exactly.
You know, for a fact that when it comes to real estate, if you see a house that's worth, let's say, $1 million, the inside of the house, that is what's inside, is probably worth $2 or $3 million. There's more value inside the home than there is outside of the home. So a home that's $100,000 might have $200,000 worth of goods inside. And a home that's worth $1 million would have maybe $2 or $3 million worth of goods inside. Definitely not the place for a $95 painting or $95, you know, photograph. These people are probably looking for a piece that's between $1,000 and $5,000, okay? A lot of artists don't realize that because they don't pay attention or they haven't really thought who my audience is. You know, and very often what we see when we work with students and we say, okay, you got to raise your prices, all of a sudden they're like, I'm selling more. Well, yeah, you're selling more because your audience wasn't buying something as cheap as what you had before. They want more money, right?
Right. I think what we should do is end this part.
All right, just go over. All right, so I think at this point, you know, we have covered most of the things that artists shouldn't do at shows, and this is going to mark the end of the second part of this recording. And Natalie wants to go over what we are going to cover in part 3 of this recording. And we are going to focus on the recession and on strategies to address the recession.
Yeah, and how, yes, and how the recession is affecting artists. And also come up with some strategies that we can use during this time,
right,
to sell our artwork. You know, what will work and what will not work.
Right. And also what the problem is, because a lot of people say there is a recession and we have to do something about it, but they don't quite understand what is really going on. I mean, recession is a cover term, but there is specific things that are going on with people and their buying of artwork or not that really haven't been clarified. And before we can go to solutions, I think that I'd like to address what are the real issues. And so what I've done is I wrote a 8-page or 7-page document, which I called Marketing in a Receding Economy, which you can download from my website as an update to the Marketing Mastery Workshop on DVD. And in the next recording, we'll go over the contents of this document and probably add a lot of things that are not in the document. So it's going to be a combination of that document, that PDF file, and the audio recording. And we'll do that next.
That sounds great.